This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
United Nations and international agencies are racing to aid tens of thousands of survivors of Monday's catastrophic flooding and mudslide in Sierra Leone's capital. Experts warn the city is vulnerable to cholera and other diseases.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details next. Also, grenade attacks in Burundi's capital kill one person and wound nearly 30 others. And gender-based violence is on the rise for South Sudanese refugees seeking shelter in Uganda. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, United Nations and international agencies are racing to aid tens of thousands of survivors of Monday's catastrophic flooding and mudslide in Sierra Leone's capital. Experts warn the city is vulnerable to cholera and other diseases. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The International Red Cross Federation says torrential rains in Sierra Leone triggered deadly mudslides, wiping out whole communities, leaving thousands homeless. IFRC Secretary General El Hadj Assi says more than 400 people have been killed and more than 600 are missing. He tells VOA the death toll is expected to rise. He says it is unlikely anyone will be found alive after 3 or 4 days. Nevertheless, the search for survivors will go on.
Somehow, there is hope that some people are missing because maybe they were not around exactly in the place, you know, where it happens, and their families are still looking for them and will be lucky to find them. Some may be stranded in the remote areas that are not accessible right away that we may find in our life.
The Red Cross is launching an emergency appeal for more than $4.5 million to help 4,600 people over the next 10 months. Greatest needs are for shelter, safe water, food, and sanitation to prevent diseases from spreading. A World Health Organization spokesman, Christian Lindemeyer, warns people affected by the mudslides and flooding are vulnerable to outbreaks of cholera and other waterborne diseases.
Flooding has damaged or can damage or cause overflow to sanitation facilities, increasing the risk of waterborne diseases. Flooding creates breeding grounds for mosquitoes and can cause, or most likely does cause, an increase in malaria and other vector-borne diseases.
Lindemeyer says the WHO is providing psychosocial care for traumatized survivors, as well as safe burials and trauma and medical care. The UN is sending a team of 7 experts to assess the damage and coordinate relief. The UN Children's Fund is providing emergency sanitation work, and the World Food Program is distributing food to thousands of survivors. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
One of the humanitarian groups at the scene of the Freetown's mudslide is Save the Children. It says it's very concerned of a possible health crisis for children. Ramatu Jallo is the group's advocacy and communications director in Sierra Leone. From Freetown, she described the scene of the mudslide to VOA's Jody Kapua.
For me, I would describe it as if you could imagine when a road is being dug up, before you put a tarmac, where you have like a layer that's been placed that's just red mud or red soil. That's basically how that side of a hill where communities were living in the valley looks like right now. It's literally looking like a road that's been dug up in preparation for tarmacking. It's actually devastating. You'd never actually imagine that people were living or there were homes that existed in that area before the time the mudslide took place. So it's absolutely traumatizing. Some of the descriptions that's also been coming in from the field have been the strong smell of decomposing bodies. It is really frightening. It's fearful. And really, to be honest, it's just something that's really hit our heartstrings again, being that we've been going through a series of tragic or traumatic events in the last couple of years.
Would you explain how the scene that you just described might trigger a child health crisis in that part of Freetown?
Child health crisis is a serious concern, primarily because basically most of the children living in that community that survived are now placed in temporary shelters. Now, you can imagine these shelters are not necessarily designed to be homes. They're there living in large crowds. It's highly likely that access to adequate sanitation will be limited, and also access to safe drinking water is going to be a challenge. For some of the children who were probably living with families that are probably in the community, we're now concerned about the access to safe water sources that they were using before. Again, this is a major concern because all of the water sources that run from that valley all the way down to the sea area are from that mudslide area and also from areas that were affected by the flood. So with regards to houses that were destroyed with the sewage systems that fell into those waters, it's creating a high public health risk. But also with our displaced children now, we're looking at protection issues. So for us right now, our children are really vulnerable.
Have you seen any evidence of disease?
We haven't seen any evidence of disease as yet, but saying that, we did have a few cases that were basically being tested for cholera. Thankfully, those have been cleared. The two cases that were suspected have been cleared. I think the underlying concern now really is the risk of diarrheal diseases. Again, another concern we have is this is the rainy season. This is the malaria season. A lot of dense greenery around us. And also with regards to this level of stagnant water that will be sitting in homes and sitting around community places, it increases the risk of high mosquito breeding.
Now, I understand that Save the Children is distributing aid to those in the community. What are you distributing?
Currently, in partnership with other organizations under the Freetown Wash Consortium, we've been distributing hygiene kits and wash kits. This basically includes like personal hygiene stuff, such as laundry soap, soap, and all the other personal items to meet your personal needs, along with buckets to store safe water with lids, kettles to meet personal hygiene and hand washing needs. These are the sort of things that we've been distributing, along with Clorox or chlorine to be able to treat water. So these have been some of the items that we've been distributing.
How are the survivors holding up? Have you talked to many of them?
I think, as you would imagine, they're still traumatized. The key thing that a lot of them are talking about is their loved ones who are still missing and trying to basically reach out to find out whether their loved ones are alive or locate them. This is a key concern.
How fearful are you and others about a possible recurrence of the landslide?
We're quite worried. There's a crack on the other side of that hill. Now, we are still expecting heavy rains in the coming days. If that should happen, it means that most of that area is vulnerable. We're also concerned that as a result of likely heavy rains again, there'll be further flooding. That means that the areas that are already vulnerable are compromised. For us, really, this is an ongoing concern, and we are still worried.
Ramatu Jallo is Advocacy and Communications Director for Save the Children in Sierra Leone from Freetown. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. Meanwhile, more than 40 people are reported dead after a landslide swept over a fishing village in northeastern DRC. Hundreds are reported still missing. The village of Tora is located on the shore of Lake Albert in Uturi province. Wednesday's landslide followed heavy rains, causing part of a nearby mountain to wash away. Reuters reports mudslides and landslides have killed over 4,000 people in Africa over the past 10 years and caused millions of dollars in damage. Experts say deforestation is one of the main reasons for the natural disasters. Analysts say there were some unexpected poll results in Kenya this year, including the ruling party's success in gubernatorial and parliamentary races and an increase in women and youth being elected at local levels. They also question whether the $483 million that Kenyan taxpayers spent on a digital election, if it was worth it. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Nairobi roads have returned to their usual pre-election bustle, and Kenyans have gone back to work. But the elections are not quite over, as opposition leader Raila Odinga insists the presidential poll was stolen and has announced plans to challenge the outcome at the Supreme Court. Official results show President Uhuru Kenyatta defeated Odinga 54% to 45%. University of Warwick Professor of Comparative Politics Gabrielle Lynch says most people expected a tighter presidential race, although she notes the final result is still in dispute. Lynch also notes the ruling Jubilee Party succeeded in gaining parliamentary seats and winning 28 of 47 governorships. She says a projected wave of independent winners failed to materialize.
Due to alleged problems with party nominations, both in the opposition and in Jubilee, in a number of constituencies and counties across the country, independent candidates stood against party candidates, and there was a prediction that quite a few of these people might win. Actually, very few independents won in the end.
Kenya's treasury says the government allocated $483 million for the election, with $415 million directed to the Electoral Commission, known as the IEBC. Kenyan researcher Nanjala Nyabola says despite these large sums, there still were problems with the voter registry, the transmission of vote counts, and a delay in the release of polling station tally forms.
We were promised a digital election. We didn't have a digital election. The only thing that was digital was the voter registration. Everything else was 100% manual. So it makes you wonder, what did we spend all this money on?
1 week before the election, the Electoral Commission's head of IT systems, Chris Masondo, was found tortured and murdered. Schaefer Okore, a program officer at political engagement organization Siasa Place, says the lack of follow-up is concerning.
Investigations, I don't think they're being done, or if they are, I don't know who's doing it. Nobody wants to answer why this man was killed or murdered. And allegations have come across that he held such a senior position in regards to the process that was supposed to be conducted. And we don't have answers. Why was he killed?
In addition, police killed at least 28 people in post-election violence, including a young girl and a baby, according to Kenya's National Commission on Human Rights. Kenya's Independent Police Oversight Authority says they are investigating these cases. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Grenade attacks in Burundi's capital last night killed one person and wounded nearly 30 others. The Associated Press quotes a police spokesman as saying the attacks took place at two bars in the Bawenzi neighborhood of Bujumbura. It's not clear who's responsible for the attack or the motive. Hundreds of people have died in political violence in Burundi since April 2015. That's when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in office. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. United Nations and international agencies are racing to aid tens of thousands of survivors of Monday's catastrophic flooding and mudslide in Sierra Leone's capital. Meanwhile, more than 40 people are reported dead after a landslide swept over a fishing village in northeastern DRC. Hundreds are reported still missing. And a grenade attack in Burundi's capital last night killed one person and wounded nearly 30 others. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. As South Sudanese refugees continue seeking shelter in Uganda, cases of gender-based violence are also reported on the rise, especially in new settlements in Adjumani district. The violence includes physical assaults, emotional violence, rape and defilement, and mostly carried out by intimate partners and close relatives. VOA's Katrin Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Although they escaped violence in their home country, violence has followed some South Sudanese women and children in Uganda's refugee settlements. This, however, is not gun violence, but gender-based violence, GBV. Joa Susan is a South Sudan refugee in Mungula 1 refugee settlement in Adjumani district.
Here in our camp particularly, you'll get the women and men just fighting at home, or neglecting even children, at times even raping happening in our camp. But if such things has happened immediately like that, we do referral pathway.
Charles Ataku is an assistant settlement commandant at Mungula 1 and 2 refugee settlements. He says among the crimes handled in the settlements are related to gender-based violence or GBV.
Rape is there, once for a while defilement, and even physical fighting between men and their wives, even parents beating children, those things are all there. But we are trying our level best because we have a police post around, cases which are criminal in nature, we always reported them to police.
Health centers in the settlements have been equipped to handle GBV cases. Apenyo Kennedy is a medical clinical officer at a health center in Paglinya Refugee Settlement in Adjumani district.
Majorly, per month, I can get like 3-2. Some months I don't get. They can come direct from the community. Sometimes they are brought by policemen. Normally, we have the rape cases, defilement cases. Those are the two that are leading.
To curb the violence, refugee agencies UNFPA and ACORD have trained community health officers to sensitize the refugees on the dangers of GBV. Okot Anthony is one of the community health officers in Paglinya Refugee Settlement.
Once we organize for sensitization, 5 or 6 women will come up with what has been happening to them, bringing all the issues to us. During the time we came here, no one knows that there's GBV, there's whatever. We don't know. Even me, myself, I don't know. But after being exposed to it, then I came to realize that all that we are doing, we are at least against women's rights. Then we have started to reform. Then we have started giving out the knowledge that we acquired from the training to our community, entire communities.
Okot explains some of the causes of the violence against women.
One, most men, yeah, so idle. They have nothing to do. They don't like their wives to ask for money from them. Two, once ratio went off, a woman asks for ratio for food to the children, and then husband will grow annoyed, will immediately start beating the wife because you may start saying that, I'm so idle, why again are you asking for this from me? Then three, women came here first, so many men were behind. After when they came here, they found that their wives have settled. So they again want to take the control of that place that their wives are now settling in by force.
Officials say with 85% of South Sudanese arriving in Uganda being women and children, addressing cases of gender-based violence needs to be made a priority. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Amnesty International is urging South Africa to take the lead in protecting human rights and good governance in Southern Africa. Regional leaders are meeting this weekend for the 37th Heads of State Summit in Pretoria. The meeting will focus on trade and industrialization, but not human rights. South Africa assumes the leadership of the Southern Africa Development Community this year. Lord Kuveya is a researcher for Amnesty International covering Zimbabwe, Zambia, Namibia, and Malawi. He told VOA's William Eagle that in recent years, human rights has been trending downward in Zambia and other parts of Southern Africa.
You look at Zambia, for instance, as an example. We had made a lot of progress in its democratization agenda and also in particular protection and promotion of human rights. Now, from 2016, when they had the elections, and with President Edgar Lungu taking over, we then began to see a downward trend towards human rights protections, where the rights of freedom of expression, association, and assembly are now being violated, especially in respect of opposition political party activists and also independent media. One of the most independent newspapers in Zambia was actually closed down, The Post, because of its criticism of the government. And then when Hakainde Hichilema started offering strong opposition in Zambia, we also witnessed the clampdown. He was arrested on so many different charges using the Public Order Act, and most recently the treason charges, which were dropped. And so that's one. We also see in Lesotho, for instance, we had also made strides in terms of human rights protection, but we're now seeing a political and security crisis in Lesotho, where human rights violations started again occurring because of contestation of power within Lesotho itself.
How much influence does South Africa have in terms of encouraging human rights in the region? Because, for example, there's always been issues of human rights in neighboring Zimbabwe and even large refugee flows.
South Africa, it has disappointed us that South Africa is taking over as chair of SADC at this summit. They must begin to do what some of the things that Nigeria, for instance, has done in West Africa. We've seen most recently the role that Nigeria and Senegal played to ensure that the election was not stolen by the president in the Gambia, for instance. This is the role we want to see South Africa playing to ensure that the upcoming elections in Zimbabwe are going to be free, fair, and democratic, and also in accordance with the SADC principles and guidelines on democratic elections, that people's right to vote is respected. People are free to express themselves, to choose the leader that they want.
Are there mechanisms within SADC to monitor or to investigate violations? And is that something that you would call for?
We would call for mechanisms to do that, to investigate violations. But we used to have a sub-regional court, the SADC tribunal. The heads of state, they closed that tribunal, that regional sub-regional court. You know, when you compare with East Africa, it's got its own regional court. West Africa, it's got its own regional court that are operating well. And you saw when things started happening in Burundi, those violations, people were able to go to the East African court to seek direction. In Southern Africa, we do not have such a body. And it's up to civil society organizations to go and investigate violations that are taking place in the different SADC states, and then report to the different intergovernmental bodies that can do that. So to answer you, there is no mechanism within the SADC Secretariat that can actually do any investigations or violations of human rights.
Is human rights on the agenda at all during this weekend's SADC meeting?
The main focus, unfortunately, and I'm sorry to say, is mainly on in trade, industrialization, and human rights is not on the agenda at all. And this is why civil society organizations are actually gathering and meeting currently to talk about the neglect by our leaders to talk about human rights. They are saying that our focus is on economic development, infrastructure building, and all those things, and industrialization. But we are saying as civil society, yes, we want development. We want economic development. But at the same time, we also want human rights protection.
That's Lloyd Kuveya, a researcher for Amnesty International. He was speaking with reporter William Eagle. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. 55 minutes of nonstop, pure, 100% African music. That's what you get when you tune in to me and my crew. This week, meet South Africa's BCUC and catch some of the band's live performance from Festival des Tours du Monde. Go deep into northern Cameroon and discover traditional sounds with Ali Kaka. Don't be slackers, soak it in. The sounds of gorgeous tunes from all over Africa. This Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com.
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.